Welcome. Thank you so much for your time, Mr. Emil Lugbero of KPMG. And we just want to, you know, talk through the state of the economy. A couple of decisions were taken recently. Let's start with, you know, the subsidy removal debacle and all of that. I mean, what are your thoughts as regards this?
Well, Rufai, I think quite a lot is in the air in terms of both the excitement and some bit of, you know, cautious optimism that's greeted these, and I think both sides of the divide are quite true, but quite largely, I think what the subsidy remover had attempted for us is a way to block massive leakage, you know, that we've seen, you know, in the past, you know, in the sector. In principle, like, you know, there is nothing wrong with subsidy in principle, and every government and every nation of the world, you know, have one form of subsidy or the other. It's an attempt to ensure that the vulnerable, the poor, could essentially be able to afford, you know, certain types of essentials. But what you do is to ensure that kind of intervention by government, you know, is invested in the area where those that are indeed targeted by those kind of intervention are the one, you know, benefiting from it, right? But what we've seen in our own, you know, in our own environment here with the fuel subsidy is that quite a lot is wrong with the process, right? The amount that is being committed to subsidy, it is such that no one can essentially justify. No one even can say for a fact that this is for its citizens. You know, we have cases of some of these subsidized PMS, you know, being smuggled out of the country. We have volume of what has been paid for excessively, you know, overbloated. And we have those who essentially shouldn't need to be subsidized, the middle class and the upper class, being the one that are benefiting quite a lot. And more fundamentally is the fact that it's taking quite a large chunk of the resource that the country hasn't got, right? There is probably no other sector or no other area of the economy that enjoy that kind of intervention by the government. And so what the policy has done is to be able to say, look, we know that in principle there will be there are pains, you know, that is going to be associated with this removal, but it's one intervention that is costing us much more than we can afford, you know, and much more than we really need to be doing. So that's essentially my take. Is it going to come with some pains? Yes, obviously. It's in fact already causing quite a lot of hardship. And that's where the systematic approach of ensuring that, you know, the real vulnerable, right, that the original policy was meant to, you know, cater for, are then thought through carefully in this process so that the palliative that they really need really can be meted out. So that's where those who have the cautious optimism, I mean, quite a lot of people who have expressed some bit of concerns about the removal are not necessarily challenging the necessity for the removal. It is the process and the countermeasures that are in place on the one hand to ensure that we still protect real, real vulnerable. And then more fundamentally is that the government also, you know, lead by example, right? It's good to ask the citizen to brace up for, you know, tough measures and face, you know, some of these challenges. But it's another for you to look into the leadership, political leadership, and to see complementary actions being taken, you know, to also show that they feel in the pinch. Right, and they're moderating the excessive of the government. They're cutting down on the waste. They're showing leadership by example, and those are the conversation that I believe needs to happen. We've taken it as a necessary pain, but we also want to see the kind of move that will happen on the government side that shows that they also taking in this kind of heat and they are supporting those who really need help.
Let's talk about inflation. What would you say is a better way to look at this inflation? Because inflation keeps going on and the projections are not getting any better for our economy.
And the truth is that for the next few months ahead of us, I think if anyone is probably projecting, you know, a short-term reduction in inflation in inflation rates, I don't think that person will be honest. The pillars that are being pulled, you know, in the economy have the immediate effect to raise the price level of goods and services. That's what the immediate measure will be. So, you look at the subsidy. The best you can have are, you know, a few sectors that may not be so fundamentally, you know, impacted. There isn't any sector that is going to probably benefit off from it from an inflationary measure perspective. But obviously, the monetary authorities then have, you know, ways to then ensure that, I mean, at the back end, the supply of money and all of the interventions by the government, you know, to either, you know, mop up excess liquidities and ensuring that, you know, the right countermeasures are being taken with appropriate data, you know, at the back end, so that this pressure is only for a very short, you know, period of time. If the measures are really targeted and specific and quite head on, it will help to revise this trend within a short period of time. But in the immediate, there's only one direction for general price of goods and services.
So that means in the immediate, we'll have to bite the bullet and still face the challenges. I want you to take me through this Forex thing and what the CBN has been trying to do and the return to the intervention in the market, because last week they had to intervene in the market again.
Yeah, so what has happened is that government had tried to remove, it's taking heads on the need to remove and eliminate the wide arbitrage opportunity that previously existed with the multiple exchange rates that we have. You know, we know that, you know, on the one hand, prior to this policy, there is an artificial, you know, government fixed exchange rate of, you know, of about 461. But everybody know that, you know, almost no one is having access to that, you know, official rate. All right. The majority, you know, go to, you know, the black market to be able to source for their FX needs. And at a point, just before the unification, you have it already, you know, in the upward of 750, you know, or within that range. Now, that gap itself is what created the arbitrage opportunity, and there is nowhere in the world where you're going to have that kind of a margin or a spread that people won't do everything possible to take advantage of the system. There is no other business as lucrative. There is no other business opportunity where you could make that kind of a margin. 300 naira plus for every $1 you are able to get from the official sources. And we know that it was happening. And we didn't need it. Not that anyone felt it's not good to buy FX at a much lower rate, but the truth is that no one had that access, other than, you know, using some corrupt means of having that access, you know, to the phone. And of course, the fact that government was artificially, you know, forcing the price down at the level it was meant that we were using the limited, you know, reserve that the country have to be able to, you know, do those interventions. And we're cheating ourselves in the foot, because if the country also earn, you know, FX earnings, it's converted at the official rate and, you know, and shared among the tiers of government. So we were also, you know, being shortchanged as a government, you know, as a country, as far as this process is concerned. So what the policy has now done is to unify that rate. Now, at the moment, you can say that maybe the market is still, you know, in a discovery state. Price discovery is all that is happening, because you hear it's starting at a 760 and ending at and ending in the day at 701, or sometimes you hear it's gone way above 800 and it's ending at about 700. So the margin is still quite significant, all right? And it is so, the fluctuation is still that wide, because the volume of intervention that you actually need to be having from government hasn't been happening, right? Because what you're having is a managed float, right? Managed float means there are at least three things that will happen. You know, forces of demand and supply on the one hand, but there's also the government intervention, right? So government intervene when there is excess supply in the market. All right, when you have excess supply, it forces down the price to a level beyond the band that you expected. And so government, you know, comes in to buy off. All right. In the same way, when the demand side is, you know, significantly in excess of the supply, it pushes up the price. Okay. And then government intervene to be able to, you know, bring in and inject more liquidity into the system so that the price is kept within the band. Now, what we haven't had since this, you know, new floats, managed floats happened, is that frequency and the volume that is required from the government, you know, to be able to keep the price at the band that is appropriate. And so they see quite a lot of excess demand in the market. So the few who could have queued up, you know, on the official FX window, everyone is chasing whatever it's available, you know, on the I&M window, and the supply isn't enough yet. We also have quite a lot of backlog that's, you know, that government needs to clear up completely. And until that is done, you won't have the confidence of the foreign portfolio investors, or, you know, from an FDI perspective, for that fund to come in the way we want it to happen, right? So it's in the early days. So when some of this, you know, huge initial takeoff demand, you know, it's met and the backlog is kept, you know, it's cleared up, and government, you know, begin to have that regular intervention of, you know, buying and selling, you know, to keep the demand and supply, you know, legs in check, then you will have the band within a range that is reasonable, and that's the only time that we can enjoy some bit of stability in the markets.
But let's talk about the pass-through effect that is now coming up because of this wobbly nature of the forex market. 40% increase in cost of clearing cars, and the pass-through effects in the economy in general, and also the increase that will be occasioned by this, you know, when the prices go up as regards our fuel prices and the likes, and some other challenges around this.
So I think, I mean, just quite similar to the point that I made with respect to the fuel subsidy. The kind of intervention we are having at the moment are not the measures that are targeted at providing a cushion. We are essentially doing a surgical operation. And it's important that both, you know, the government and, you know, the general public understand it this way. Now, when the general public understand it this way, they know that the short-term impact of this type of surgical operation is pain. Right, when Deloitte released, you know, a newsletter on, you know, this managed, you know, floating of currency, the headline, the title of that newsletter was short-term pain, long-term gain, or if you like, at least potential long-term gain, because for you to actually have the long-term benefit, quite a lot of ifs needs to happen. You need to manage the process. You need to do all of your intervention. You need to ensure that, in addition to this measure you're taking, you know, whatever is saved is then applied, you know, in the right channel, so that the infrastructure development, the education, the health, and all of the other critical sectors, you know, those resources are channeled in that area, and in the long term, you could then have the benefits. So, with a floating, for example, one of the benefits perhaps will be the availability All right, you have it more available, supply is increased, but it's not going to get the price down to government 460.
Yes.
When the right thing is done, I mean, the answer is somewhere in the middle. All right, so somewhere in the middle, it probably won't end at 750. The current price is just because of the extra push, right? But on the government side, I think understanding that quite a lot is being asked of the citizen requires that there is a deliberate, targeted interventions that is aimed at providing some bit of short-term palliative. Because you can't, I mean, even when you're taking, someone through very serious operation, all right, you've got to provide some short-term palliative. Otherwise, the patient is going to die off. All right, so the operation is necessary, the intervention is necessary, but the pain is significant to require that there is a counter, balance, on the other side to ensure that the pain is manageable. All right, in the short term, quite a lot more, of the initial action of the government or some of the policy are really going to take a toll. Conversation is already ongoing on, electricity tariff, for example. That's going to compound the woes. And I mean, school session is about to be over in some couple of weeks now. When the new, academic session comes in, schools, mostly private schools that, people could send their kids to, are going to be asking for new school fees. You're going to have landlord asking for increased rent. Transportation has already gone, out of the roof. People are paying double, sometimes 150% increase, on what they're currently doing. So what's government going to do to ensure that there are, relief measures? Very well targeted, very well directed, not the kind of interventions that you only get to hear. You can't see the people, you don't know exactly who is benefiting from the social interventions and all of that. So we need that over the next immediate to say 1 year, such that individual also need to do some bit of rebalancing, some bit of reality check. We need to get away from luxurious and exuberant living to how do we cut our budget? How do we then be more introspective in the way we channel the resources that we have and all of that? So quite a lot of change, both on the people, but more importantly on the government, to ensure that the citizen could bear through this very painful process.
As we wrap up, I'd like you to talk about multiple taxation, sir, which is really niggling a lot of business, because the government keeps saying the approach is raising more taxes. Is that the best approach when businesses are suffering?
Well, I think with tax, there are actually at least two key problems that is facing the economy. You spoke about multiple taxation, and this is talking about the multiplicity of the tax item. I mean, officially, if you go through the approved, taxes list, right, you have at least 60 officially documented, federal about 9, at the state government level, maybe about 16 local government levies and charges of different type of about 25. Now, if you go to, many other local governments, okay, or you ask Manufacturer Association of Nigeria, for example, or you pick, a manufacturing company and ask, give me a list of all of the taxes and levies that you pay, you're probably going to have them numbering, close to 200 of different items. Now, this has multiple effects. One is the administrative burden it places on taxpayer. Even if the amount you're going to pay isn't that significant, the process of paying, where you're supposed to pay, the time that you have to devote to compliance is a significant cost and leakage to the business. Plus, when you have too many items that you're chasing, you create inefficiency in the process, you create leakages in the process, and that's exactly what we're having. In fact, if you do an analysis of all of the tax items, earning income for the country, maybe about 80 something percent of it is from our top 6 taxes.
Those are VAT,
so you really
and the like.
That number of taxes. So that's on the number of taxes. So part of the conversation, and I think part of the if you look at the economic advisory report that, you know, it's made its way out, I think it's one of the areas that's also, you know, caught the attention of the new government to say, look, we need to consolidate the taxes. The FIRS has, you know, been the forefront of this. I mean, many of us have spoken about this quite a lot of time, that you can make the process more efficient. But there's also the multiplicity of the tax agencies, which is as bad as the number of taxes, right? In different parts of the world, you only have a single tax collection agency for at least a tier of government, right? But in Nigeria, isn't so. You have the custom, you know, collecting cost import duties, you know, and excise, you know, and all of that. You have the FIRS, and you have several agents. You want to get a passport, you need to go and pay, you know, to the Nigerian Immigration Service. You pay NIMASA, you pay these different kind of fees. Even sometimes the, you know, law enforcement agencies, okay, sometimes, you know, have certain types of levies and charges, or, you know, that they demand and they collect on behalf of the government. This is part of what is creating the leakage. This is part of what is creating the administrative burden and the inefficiency, right, that is making the business environment to be so overburdened with compliance. We need to not only consolidate the taxes, we also need to unify the agencies that are collected and block the leakage. I can give you just a quick example as I wrap up. If, for example, you have someone who is importing a plant or a machinery outside of the country, when that particular importer or business or taxpayer is dealing with the custom, his objective is to reduce the value of the imported item to as low as he probably can get, so that the duty is low. You just spoke about increasing, you know, cost of clearing and all of that. The fact is that there's probably no item of, you know, an item being imported in the country that actually pay duty on the fair value of the item. Everyone will try as much as possible to have the value reduced so that the duty to be paid is reduced. Now, the same person, as soon as customs is done and needed to deal with the FRS to take deduction for the cost of the asset that has been incurred, or to take deduction for the cost of the stock that has been imported, the same person is not only interested in just getting the true 100% value, if possible, that person is going to find a way of inflating the value with some other administrative cost. So on the one hand, you've paid duty probably based on 40-30% of the cost of the item, but here you are with FRS, you know, presenting 100% of the receipts. You've just changed government from the duty side, but now you want to claim 100% of the deduction. Now, that will be difficult to do if it's exactly the same agency that is responsible for both the duty collection and handling your corporate tax returns. We are going to make the deduction. That's a significant, you know, leakage that's going to happen, you know, when that unification happens. And you can compare this, you know, from one state to another. You can compare it with someone who is dealing with the state internal revenue services and having to make an argument before a federal inland revenue service official, you know, on a particular expense item. So if these two alone are done without increasing rates, all right, we can significantly increase the amount of tax collection that the government is making. It's a huge area of leakage that needs to be dealt with. And it doesn't have to, you know, require new item of taxes or new finance bills being proposed so that there's a raise in the tax rate.
I'd like to say a very big thank you so much, Mr. Yemi Olugbenro of Deloitte. Thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate you this afternoon. Have a great holiday. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.